morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you are listening to On the Comic Couch Radio. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Dazza. Dazza, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
All right. Now, what we usually done in the past, we'll usually have a certain topic at hand, but we decided we're going to do it with a brand new format, right, Dazza? This is your baby, so feel free to tell the people exactly the way the show's changing up in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I'd just sort of change things round it a little bit for a number of reasons, and I thought if we sort of made it more into like a segment format as opposed to just doing it a one single subject for a show, I think there's a couple of reasons. Number one is that there's quite a lot of stuff that I sort of, you know, would like the chance to talk about that basically doesn't fit into like a whole sort of episode. So for example, a few weeks back I was watching a Netflix film called Assault on Wall Street,
mm-hmm.
which was sort of like, you know, just this sort of like, you know, this like independent film that I was watching for, you know, I'd like to, you know, say a few things about this, but it's something that wouldn't fit into like, you know, any sort of like, you know, topics that we could, you know, that we would be sort of, you know, talk about with just a one format show. So that was kind of, you know, and so it's basically sort of giving us a bit more freedom to talk, you know, more about sort of like, you know, movies which are on at the time, television, that sort of thing. Another reason is, in the past we've sort of built a lot of the shows around my articles, and it started to feel to me that it was probably making it like a bit of a redundant to basically me write the whole article, and I always try to basically get pretty much everything I want to do into the whole article, and then to do a show where I'm pretty much just going over this sort of like, you know, the same points again that I've already written, it just seemed that make it was just kind of a waste of one over two, and you know, I do think I'm a better writer than I am a talker, so I think we'll still talk about the articles, but we won't do like a whole show about them. We'll do maybe about like 5 or 10 minutes just sort of as like a little teaser about what the articles are going to be about. And also I always used to think that the most interesting things we did about the article, that when we did shows on the article, was basically your input and your basically feelings when, you know, you read them and sort of like, you know, the questions that you had. I think those were a bit, so if we sort of like, you know, focus more on that. So we'll put, it's more like sort of like a plug and a tease to the actual article. So then you can actually go to the article and basically read the whole thing in its, you know, entirety and everything like that. But I've just a little bit of a sort of like a, you know, a bit of follow up on the show itself.
Yes. But you're right in the sense that it was just redundant to just, we do the show, we cover the same ground in the article. So it was sort of just repeating itself. While still great, I mean, your article is great. So it's not so we're covering that ground, but to do it twice is sort of redundant. So sort of makes sense that, you know, in the future, we're still going to plug your articles. And that's the thing, too. Lately, you've been writing too many articles to keep up with all the shows we do on a weekly basis. So just going forward, this is a significantly easier thing to do for us in the future.
Yeah. And also, it'll free up, you know, because I'll still talk about sort of like a segment on comics of the past and things. But it will be more like sort of like, the, you know, sort of, basically me plugging a sort of like, you know, a really good comic story from the past that I wouldn't really do a full article about, but I'll basically maybe do like 5 minutes of sort of like, you know, sort of like, you know, plugging. This is a, you know, forgotten classic from the past and, you know, one you could, you know, check out. So we still will do like the comic things, but, you know, it will just be basically, you know, there's a reason to read the articles, and then you come to a podcast, and then you'll get totally different things. I think that's the way to go.
Okay, perfect. And one of these new segments that we're going to be doing going forward is a new segment. So specifically, we're going to be covering a bunch of stuff that, you know, since we've done the last show, there's been new stuff that's come up. So, Dazza, what are we going to first talk right here?
Well, first thing I want to talk about, there's a couple of trailers which have come out recently. The big one, of course, is Civil War.
You don't say.
What I found interesting about all the Civil War trailers is that the each one that's come out has been massively different from the other in the story that it was telling. And for example, the one before this was pretty much, it gave the idea that the entire conflict was going to be centered around the Winter Soldier and Cap sort of torn loyalty between, you know, doing right by his friend and doing right by the American government. This one was a very different one because it focused more on the actual the legislation which
Correct.
I brought in, the accords as it was, mm-hmm. and it centered more on that part of it. So it's going to be interesting going in because obviously the film's going to be about a combination of the two. But you watch these two trailers and you're getting two very different reasons of why the two factions are going to war. And also, what was interesting about it, I thought, was that Cap almost played a background role. In most of this, it was really a lot more about Tony Stark, I felt. You know, he got most of the key scenes and it was basically his sort of like, you know, the Black Widow sort of talking to Tony about it and Tony expressing, why he was sort of, what his point of view on this, fight was going to be. So I thought that was quite interesting itself. And of course, there was the feel good moment that we've been waiting for.
I remember I watched this trailer and a lot of this felt like stuff we'd seen before in previous trailers, and up until now I was like, there's a couple of new shots and maybe a couple of new lines that I maybe never seen or heard before, and I was like, this is great and all, but this is more or less the same trailer I've seen before.
Until the end.
Yes. I was waiting for you to let the other shoe drop. Yes. Until the end.
Yeah. And because it sort of faded out a bit. And if I can't think, we're not going to get what we are expecting. And then he made this reference to underoos, which I had to actually look up because I basically have never heard of his term.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dad. That's one of those things where I keep forgetting that you're English. So that's one of these things that are just, you just assume everyone knows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think if he'd had said jammies, it meant more to me. But yeah, and it was that sort of like thing that's when Spider-Man appeared. And there's this great video that somebody's made up, which is basically just loads and loads of like shots of different characters in films, also to like cheering and pointing and stuff. It's just like, that's how I felt when I saw this. It was like, yes, there he is. Like, just sort of, I basically marked out. I went on Facebook, went nuts and everything. so absolutely, I absolutely love that. I actually hope though that this is the last trailer that we do, and that is the only shot we see of Spider-Man. I don't want to see any more.
I think we're, 2 months out until Civil War comes out?
It's the end of April.
It's scary to think how close it is.
Actually, yeah, it's just over a month, so yeah. And we get it a week early, of course. As we always Bastards. Do with Marvel movies.
That's what made me so upset from the last Avengers movie. Because normally I'm a guy that's, whatever. I don't mind paying for the film. If, for people that, steal films, I sort of look down upon. But one of those instances, I was like, no. This is our movie. You gave it to them a week in advance. No. I'm going to find any way to pirate this movie because no way.
I mean, we always get them a week in advance. I actually don't know, why it is. I don't know if you sort of like before Marx is kind of like a little test thing or something. I don't know, but we always do. But yeah, actually, talk about things that we don't want to see. In this trailer, it looks like they actually showed us more than they actually intended.
Correct.
Because with these things, people go through it by, frame by frame, trying to look for any like Easter eggs in the background and stuff. And there is a shot when the trailers first came up, which basically showed the Winter Soldier. And this might be a spoiler, so if you don't want to hear spoilers, just sort of, go ahead a few minutes. Of the Winter Soldier lying on the ground with his arm torn off.
Oh,
now,
dear.
It looks like this may not have been, because lots of websites, basically sort of point this out about. And when I went to actually check this out for myself, that footage is now gone. So I've never uploaded anything onto YouTube. So I don't know if you can actually go into a YouTube video and like edit it or anything. But that scene, the scene's still there, but the camera's sort of like focused more downwards. So the sort of like, you can't actually see the Winter Soldier in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like this may have been something that they basically accident. It's in the scene where it shows you Cap and Iron Man basically trading blows. So it looks like you may have actually seen more than they actually wanted you to see in this film. Possibly.
Okay. Sounds good enough. From there, did you have any more thoughts on that before we move on to, I think, something that came out later on this week?
No, that's pretty much done.
Okay, so that was, I think, about a week ago. Something that came out this week was the Apocalypse trailer. I guess we've had trailers before, sort of teaser trailers on the Super Bowl, but this is what we got for more of a fleshed out trailer. We saw a lot more action. We saw a lot more what the final film's going to more or less look like. So, Des, what were your thoughts on this new trailer?
This is one which I'm sort of now starting to get excited for. With all the other films that are sort of like coming out, like Batman v Superman, Civil War, Suicide Squad, this one's kind of been sort of at my back of my mind quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But this trailer sort of like, you know, got me more into it. One of the things that I sort of liked about it was we saw more of Apocalypse, and he actually seems to have, you know, he looks, you know, because there was a lot of concern when the first photographs started being shown of this. Because people were basically saw the costume for, oh god, that looks like a Power Rangers type villain.
Oh yes, and I'm very familiar with what you're talking about, yes.
The thing is, when you see these like really, what you got to remember is when you see these like sort of like, you know, screenshots from like, you know, the set and everything like that, is that they're like the first stages of this thing. I mean, when they're making films, they're basically working on the special effects, you know, right up to the, you know, to the final cut of the film, you know, before it sort of, you know, goes out. So they basically had a lot more to do, you know, to do on there. And I think Apocalypse actually looks, you know, quite good in this. It looks like it's going to be a really action-packed film as well. I mean, most of the footage that we've actually seen is basically on the battle scenes and everything. I think it's, you know, it's looking good. One thing I did find, and it wasn't until I actually saw some of the battle scenes that I realised, is that all the four horsemen or sort of are pretty much X-Men characters. Yeah, are X-Men. With the exception of Magneto. And even Magneto, you can say that, you know, is kind of like, you know, a teeters between X-Men at time to time. So when they actually were battling, it was basically seen like, so like a, you know, I know this is a different universe, a different timeline now, but it was very much like a X-Men versus X-Men type, you know, scenario to it.
And it makes sense going forward, because really, if had they just thrown in, you know, just whatever X-Men or whatever Four Horsemen, would have had the same oomph, would have had the same weight to it. And it's like, no, so it kind of makes sense to sort of balance the both sides out, because normally you have just generic mutants, or in the instance of Magneto versus the X-Men, you have these characters that have been fleshed out in the past. But really, going forward, That's always been the gimmick for Apocalypse. It's like, who are going to be his horsemen? So it makes sense for them to do it in the film as well.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, if you actually look at most of the Marvel films and the Fox ones and everything, it's very much, the development is always on the heroes. The villains, you know, there's very few of the villains that basically show up in more than one film apart from, you know, Loki and stuff. They're very much basically sort of, you know, the villains are basically just there for like one film and that's pretty much it. You know, so it sort of, you know, it does make sense for him to basically sort of push these, you know, the Four Horsemen as X-Men, because then we'll basically, I would imagine by the end of the film, we'll basically sort of join the X-Men and then sort of like go along from there.
Okay, and that's pretty much your thoughts on the Apocalypse trailer. Like I said, I'm looking forward to it. It's one of these things to where, you know, I kind of felt like I'm burnt out on these Bryan Singer X-Men films, but just like the last one, it's like they managed to bring me in.
Yeah.
And like I said, the last film was fine. Didn't blow me out of the water. I didn't think it was on par with maybe the Marvel films, but I still, you know, for all things considered, it was still a good film.
Yeah.
Okay, this is something that you're probably going to have to burden a lot of it, because I still have yet to see this. The Preacher trailer at South by Southwest?
It was actually a preview showing of the first episode.
Ooh.
Of the Preacher TV. South by Southwest is kind of like a film comic type convention. I think it's in, believe it's in Texas. Could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's in Texas. And they basically showed the first episode in front of the audience of fans and everything. And they had you know, Seth Rogen, I think Garth Ennis was there doing a question and answer session. So the series starts on May 22nd, I believe. But like I said, they showed like, you know, a live show into, you know, to the audience, here of the first episode. And, reaction was pretty positive. You know, people, you know, apparently, I mean, it's in front of fans, so it's probably like the target audience. But at the same time, To me, it shows that they're actually very confident in what they've got, the fact that they're actually willing to, you know, go out there and, you know, show it ahead of time, you know, to sort of, you know, members of the general public. And he did get really praised really well. One of the things that sort of people mentioned is, was the humour. The dark humour came across really, really strong, which is something that I was kind of, in the trailer that I've actually seen, I was quite worried about, because it seemed to be going on the Walking Dead type, very heavy, serious tone to it. But apparently there is a lot of humour in it. Apparently there's also a cameo by a Hollywood A-list actor who is known for his sort of like his association with a certain religious cult, shall we say. So I don't want to say too much because spoilers. But apparently there was a really funny cameo in there. So, you know, I'm sure I must have mentioned this before. Preacher is my all-time favorite comic.
Huh. You know, I did not know that. Someone has done X amount of shows with you, and that's one thing I didn't know about you, dude.
I absolutely love it. I love quite a lot of Garth Ennis stuff, but Preacher was just one of those comics that I absolutely really did adore. And I've been waiting for this for so long, because there's been so many like false starts. At one point it was going to be a movie, and then Matt, I remember it was another TV show, and then Matt got canned. So to actually, you know, to finally get it, I'm not expecting a straight adaptation of the comic. Well, and to be honest, I kind of don't want that anyway. It's going to be like, said, you know, an interpretation as such. But I am really excited for it. I'm just, you know, seeing these characters on screen and stuff like that. And I'm really interested to see, you know, the direction that they go with this.
My only reservation for this is I'm sort of there with you in the sense that it was a limited series. So if they want to make this a continuing television show, they can't do a verbatim A for A remake of the series, the comic book series. But at the same time, I still have my reservations from this, because just what I've seen from the trailer that I guess made its way to the internet a couple of months ago. But it doesn't look like there's anything really supernatural to it, and I'm worried, because that's what the original series was. So to take that much of a departure, it's just like, and you'll see this often, they'll diverge so much from the original source material. I'm like, well, then why? All you were really buying then was the name, if you're going to go that far off the reservation. So that's my only thing. Until I actually see something supernatural and it's at least resemble the comic book in any way, shape, or form, I'm still sort of touch and go with it.
I think the thing is for me, though, but for me is, the supernatural elements were never the things that I was most excited about Preacher.
Oh.
You know, for me in Preacher, the things I loved was basically the relationship between Custer, Cassidy, and Tulip. To be honest, there was a lot of supernatural elements in there, but it was never as heavy as, say, Hellblazer.
Okay.
You know, but there were sort of quite a lot of down to earth characters in there as well. I mean, but you know, the supernatural was kind of like sort of, you know, on the periphery. There was one storyline they did, where basically Custer basically became like a sheriff of a small town for a while, which went on for about like 10 issues. And there was just a story. There was no supernatural element. Custer didn't even have his powers at that stage, he'd lost them. And it was just basically like, just sort of like a storyline set in a backwater. And I absolutely, it was one of my favorite runs in the series. So, you know, the supernatural elements, it's, if that doesn't come along, I'm probably not going to be that sort of, you know, disappointed. But the thing that I really do worry about is, you know, cause there's very few things about the actual, like, you know, storyline that we're going to get, is the whole thing about Preacher was basically sort of like Custer's quest to basically find God and bring him to, you know, to heal for, you know, the stuff that he had done in the past. It was kind of like that kind of quest. I just wonder if any American network is basically going to, you know, go that heavy into it. You know, I've not heard any mention of what, you know, how God's going to be, you know, be played in this, how he's going, you know, so that's the kind of thing that, you know, if you take that out of it, the thing is about Preacher was so many different storylines of threads going on, you know, that they can expand on, that, you know, that they can lose a few things. So, I just want a good TV show. I just want to see those three characters in there. An arse face, of course.
Yeah, I think that's a safe assumption. You could still sort of tell that story without doing all the supernatural stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. From there, we can go. I don't know how much you've seen, but I'm just curious what your opinions are in general of the new season of Daredevil on Netflix.
I've just finished yesterday. I finished episode 9. Mm-hmm. So I have been binge watching, and I think it's absolutely been incredible. Okay. You know, it's this. I mean, I love the first season. You know, I really did. I think this season has been even better.
Oh, okay, you know? Cool.
Yeah, it's there's. I mean, I've watched the 9 episodes. There's not a single episode that I find, you know, because I love the first one, but the one or two episodes towards the end where things slow down quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, there has not been a duff episode.
Okay.
Every single one has been fabulous. All the elements that we've been looking forward to have worked so well. The Punisher one, I thought it was going to be great. The storyline has basically exceeded my expectations. In the directions it's gone, you know, the interpretation of that character. The fight scenes have been incredible. You know, I don't want to give any spoilers away, but if you loved that scene in the first season where they sort of do the long tracking shot where he's basically in the black outfit where he's fighting him, if you love that scene, there's something in the second season that you'll love just as much.
Oh.
You know, there's just so many, you know, great elements. The Elektra character, which when I saw the trailers, the accent and everything, I'm not sure how this is going to play out, works really, really well. Absolutely. I mean, I've been working all weekend and I wish I had the day off so I could just basically finish the series. I've been really into it so much. I just think it's been, you know, this Daredevil series, it's one of the, you know, the really, one of the best things that, you know, sort of has come out of this sort of, you know, Marvel expansion, you know, and I think the fact as well that it's one of these TV shows where the fact that they don't have the massive budget like the films has worked into its favor.
Mm, okay.
Because they've had to basically, you know, do other, basically to make it work, they've had to, you know, work on sort of like, you know, doing interesting, you know, exciting fight scenes, you know, good characters, good storylines. It's sort of, you know, by doing that, they've been forced to be sort of creative. And I think it's been great. There's so many characters in there. Foggy, you know, I think is, you know, a great character, you know, Karen Page, you know, just across the board. It's just so, you know, there's not a single time when a character comes, or in fact, there's sometimes where Daredevil can take a backseat at the time and you don't miss him because there's so much other good stuff going on.
There's all these moving parts.
Yeah, but Daredevil himself, I mean, you know, I think he's been, like, you know, played really, really well. I've absolutely loved this season. Like I say, I'm not going to give any spoilers, but if you love the first one, I'm sure you'll love this one.
Okay, I just have my reservations for the show, and I don't know if you've been seeing our chat with me and Dave. We've had kind of a tentative argument because I was sort of upset because
I've been kind of avoiding that because I didn't know how far Dave was in there, so I didn't want him sort of like, you know, spoiling something. Because when I watched Jessica Jones, a character came along and I just happened to see a spoiler that somebody thing, which kind of ruined it a little bit for me.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
So I've been kind of like avoiding people's chats and stuff.
No, well, my reservation is just, you know, I'm someone who, you know, I watched the first season because I'd seen the trailer, and from the outfit, they seem to be basing a lot of this first season off Frank Miller's Man Without Fear. So I was like, okay, I'm on board. And for the most part, like I said, it's all things like where they'll take enough to where, okay, maybe I'll watch it and it'll sort of, you know, retell a lot of things more often than not in a different way, but it's faithful enough to where I can justify watching it. So then naturally my indication was, well, then you're going to go from the first Daredevil, you know, obviously a starting point Daredevil story, a really good Daredevil story. So from there, naturally you're just going to gravitate towards the best Daredevil story of all time, the Born Again storyline. And I've seen from the trailers and the indicators and everyone telling me what's going on in the series, and it's like a lot of the season seems to be focusing just on all the new characters, the Punishers, the Elektras, and then, you know, eventually the new villain that they're going to introduce, the Hand, and that's great and all, but I'm just like, I feel like those are just like distractions. I'm like, I'm sure those are great and all, and I'm sure this series is good, but you know, I sort of want their direction. And what they seem to be kind of doing this in their film properties. They'll mine their best stories and they'll choose to use that as a source material. But this seems to be just, well, we want to do something with Punisher, and we want to do something with Elektra. And I'm like, that's fine. But the key to these shows has always been basing things, a lot of the storylines off the source material. So it's like, it's fine, but I really don't feel this urgency to watch. Like even the Jessica Jones series that just made its way to Netflix a couple months back. That was based off the great Bendis series, the Alias series. So I was like, okay, I'm on board to watch this. It's going to be something to where the casual person can watch it, but someone as me who's read comics, it's like it rewards me for having read. But going forward, I'm just like, well, I'll get around to watching it, but there's no urgency. I feel like they really missed on an opportunity to tell a fantastic story, and they've chosen to instead, oh, we're going to do stuff with Punisher and Elektra. So it's, I'm a little disappointed.
I personally think that Born Again is coming. I think down the line, because there will be more seasons. I think, to be honest, I think Born Again's the sort of story which I kind of think is, that to me would be the story that you would do in the final season. If say they do basically, like, let's say they do four seasons of Daredevil. Mm-hmm. I think Born Again is the sort of story that you basically do as the big climax. That's how I would sort of do it, because
that's sort of the marquee Daredevil storyline, and the fact that you're going to continue doing the series and not doing that, it's not doing justice to the character in that storyline. If you just, well, we want to play with all these other toys, but don't want to tell a good story. So it's like, well, then the show isn't for me then.
I think Born Again will come, but I think it's the sort of thing where you've got to sort of build. But Born Again is basically a story where basically Daredevil gets torn down. And I think to basically tell that story right, you've got to maybe do a few seasons of building Daredevil up so that he can basically then lose everything. So I think you probably want Born Again now, but I think if that's the storyline, you're better off sort of like, you know, down the line. You've got to basically get Matt Murdock into a point in his life where basically everything's like, you know, great, his law firm's going, he's sort of, you know, got the girl and everything. And then it makes more of an impact when sort of like Kingpin comes in and slowly takes all that away from him and basically sort of like has him basically sort of beaten. And then so he can build himself up. But I do think that storyline is coming. I mean, if you watch Jessica Jones, you'll see that there's a few setting the scene for Born Again to come. Let's put it that way.
I'm also of the opinion is I also have a problem with not understanding if Daredevil is one of these characters like maybe a Jessica Jones where they only really had that one series by that one writer that really told the story. Really told a great story. But this is Daredevil we're talking about. This is sort of, you know, the Marvel's, you know, sort of flagship title in the sense that you've had a ton of great people tell a bunch of great stories. And your idea for a second season is, okay, we're going to do none of that. And we're going to tell this story with Punisher and Elektra.
Yeah. but trust me, it is a really good story.
Okay, maybe I'll.
I've been really, and also I think that one of the things that they are doing is they are building towards. They've got a game plan for these TV series, but they're going to basically do a Defenders TV show. So they basically sort of, you know, that's also in my mind. So they're using this, you know, to bring in a few characters to sort of build towards that. So they've got a game plan, but you know, I'm sure that Born Again. You know, Born Again's coming. I am coming.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
Did you feel like talking about any of the other Netflix properties that they have? We never actually got around to talking proper Jessica Jones.
The other one is Jessica Jones, which, I mean, a few things out of that that I just, you know, want to talk about is that basically I really love the Jessica Jones series. It was very different to Daredevil in the fact that it was basically it wasn't as sort of like crazy action orientated. The Purple Man, it was a different kind of villain. He was great, by the way, in that, you know, the Purple Man, he was absolutely chilling. I think it was, you know, and you know, just like Kingpin, I thought was great in the first season. In this, you know, in this season, I thought it was absolutely, you know, fabulous. He, you know, he's, I mean, he stole every scene that he was on. He really was a character that you wanted to see more of. I really like Jessica Jones. I like the character. The thing that I didn't so much like about it, which I thought was really clumsy, is that the action scenes, the fight scenes, just looked really awkward to me. You know, the actress in it was great at doing, you know, Jessica Jones as a person, everything, but she they could have done with some sort of like stunt double or something. Even scenes where she was just like, say, running across a balcony or something, it just kind of looked a little, like the only word I can say is awkward. That, you know, but the good thing about it was that the action scenes weren't really, it was a different story that they told. It was more sort of, you know, psychological, you know, sort of thing. So that to me wasn't, it wasn't a massive issue, but when they did do the fight scenes, I wasn't that, you know, crazy about them. Another thing as well, I just, you know, because we've also got a Luke Cage TV series coming up.
Yeah, we just saw that trailer made its way to the internet, I think it was earlier this week, so.
Oh, I've not seen that yet. Have to check
it's
that.
It's not much of a trailer, to be fair. It's really just a teaser. They'll show a couple of things. I don't want to ruin the trailer for you, but it's very much just, it's a 30 seconds to a minute, and it's just sort of a teaser trailer. They show some of the stuff he'll do in the series, and then they just cut to the big logo. It's just coming to Netflix, so it's not.
It's just, okay. I mean, the thing about that is that I liked Luke Cage as a character in Jessica Jones. But I didn't come out of it thinking, oh, I really want to see a Luke Cage TV series with that character.
I'm right there with you, dude.
He was just kind of like, an easygoing sort of like, you know, sidekick. He didn't really sort of do enough for me. I mean, for one thing, I was sort of, you know, he was a very easygoing, mild-mannered character. And that's not kind of how he always, you know, Luke Cage, I always think of being a bit of a, I know they always change the characters when we do these things, but he always comes across to me as being like a bit of a hothead, you know, sort of like, you know, street fighter style thing. And as I'm watching it, I thought, you know, he's fine, but he's not something that I really sort of like, that I feel like he's sort of charismatic and cool and of a character that I want to see him basically in his own series.
He's a character that, you know, he's most famous for. He's not really known for his solo stuff. Like whenever you think of Luke Cage, the first thing that often comes to mind is, you know, the Heroes for Hire with him and Iron Fist. But then also, you know, obviously the stuff that he did with Alias with Jessica Jones, and then from the Bendis series leading the Avengers. So this is a character who, you know, there's not really this pining for a solo series from Luke Cage. So I'm wondering where is this coming from? Like, there's not like this pantheon of great Luke Cage solo stories to pull from. So it's my questioning is, why bother? It's like, you could have done Heroes for Hire. You know, that's the one thing that Marvel has yet to do. They haven't done the buddy comedy. So they could have had this, you know, sort of, if they wanted to go in the gritty approach, they could still make it sort of lighthearted. I mean, sort of gritty, but you could have this lighthearted moments. You could have, you know, sort of the Heroes for Hire thing. And it's like, that's something that DC sort of, you know, I don't know if they're actually going to go forward with it, but they sort of teased doing the Booster Gold and Blue Beetle thing, and I'm like, okay, that's cool. That's sort of something that Marvel hasn't done, and they really should, considering that you have such all this great source material.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the thing about it was sort of more, you know, the actor and the character that he was in that thing. It just, you know, it just wasn't enough in there that had me sort of thinking, you know, I want to see this guy and sort of thing. And maybe also to give him more of an edge when we have him in his TV show, give him more sort of like, you know, more of a sort of, you know, more of a starring personality. But as a, you know, we'll see, but I wasn't that sort of, you know, I thought the character was fine as a, you know, has a companion to Jessica Jones and, you know, but I just didn't get that feeling of sort of a, you know, this was a character that I really wanted to, you know, see more about. But, you know, we'll see.
Okay. From here, now we're still sort of figuring out the new format of the show. Dazza, where do you want to go from here? Because I know there's still a ton of things we could still talk about.
Okay. But the only other thing, news, right? The The trailer that I saw very, very briefly, which was Code 8, which is something that's just dropped in the last few days. And it's one of these films that it seems to be a bit of a trend lately, like with Cloverfield and stuff, where basically they seem to be managing to get these films off the ground in secret and then just sort of, you know, dropping, you know, information about them. It's the guy from Arrow, Stephen Amell. Mm-hmm. He's basically, come up with a film that looks like it's got that sort of District 9 independent type feel to it. But the premise is that basically there's a world where there's people with superpowers.
Oh, okay.
And the tagline is that basically there's 4% of the world has superhuman powers and 60% of crime is caused by that 4%. So the concept seems to be that they've basically made like a robot police force, which is being used to basically control the to police the superhero population. So it kind of looks like a little bit like the Sentinels type scenario, but they're like the good guys, as it was. And this has just sort of dropped in the last few days. And it looks like it's going to be one of these films which is very heavy on the viral marketing, because there's actually a website which is basically at the moment has just got like a countdown. And the countdown basically comes to an end on Tuesday.
You know what this comes... So, okay, go ahead. Continue.
So I'm guessing that basically we're going to get like either a sort of a whole website explaining the premise, or we're going to get like a bigger trailer then. But it was just something that sort of just you know, it caught my attention and got me intrigued.
You know, I just saw a trailer and I heard you explain the premise. You know what it sounds like? Exactly verbatim. Martial Law.
Yeah. Now you mention it. Yeah.
And if you haven't already, check out that show that we do on Martial Law. But now I'll be sure to link in the description. But that's what it comes off. It's like it's just this police outfit that just primarily deals with superheroes. And the robots, obviously, you know, when you see it, it conjures up ideas of Sentinels from the X-Men series. But really, when you describe it like that, policing superheroes, I'm like, that sounds exactly like Martial Law. And for those of you not familiar with people with Martial Law, is very quickly explain to people what Martial Law is, Dazza.
Yeah, I mean, Martial Law was it was done by a British creator, Pat Mills, who did a lot of the 2000 AD stories. He's basically a character who basically lives in a post-apocalyptic world where there's lots and lots of gangs of superheroes, but the superheroes are basically sort of just real arseholes. They basically use their powers just to bully people and like form street gangs and, you know, get into petty crime and stuff. And Martial Law is kind of, he was basically a hero, but he's now basically, take a point. So he's basically like the police force, and his role is to basically, sort out the superheroes when they get out of line.
It sounds very similar, to be fair.
Yeah.
Okay, do we want to go to our next gimmick where we do the movie gimmick, basically?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, explain to folks what it is going forward.
Okay, well, what this is going to be is we're going to, each week, or each show, we're basically going to take a year in history. And we're going to start with 1970, because it's basically going to be about movies. And the 70s is when, you know, movies kind of really started to get, like, you know, more interesting and everything, and sort of when the blockbusters started coming out. And we're going to basically look at the top 10. Well, you're going to read out the top 10. And we're basically going to pick each of us are going to pick two films from that list of the top 10 box office films for that year. And one film we're going to pick, and I need to come up with some sort of catchy headline for this. the only thing I can think of is in the UK on the local radio show that I listen to, which basically runs down the football results, it always says rate'em or slate'em. So if you ring in, you basically... If you're saying good things about your team, you're rating them. If you're saying bad things about your team, if they've sort of lost them, you slate them. So we always start with, so are you going to rate them or slate them? So basically we're going to pick two films, one of which is basically going to be a film that we really, really like from that list. And then the other thing is a film that we are basically going to basically slate, or basically just sort of basically our least favourite film from that list. So I guess if you sort of want to get a bit of context, basically if there was one film from that list that you had to basically sort of like dispose of for all of time, which film would it be?
Ooh.
I mean, it could be that we'll have like sort of 10 films that we really, really like. So we've got to pick a film that, you know, that we think is okay, but you know, we have to pick a film on that list.
Yeah, this is going
to
be hard, especially when we're dealing with some of the most successful movies. That's how we're doing the gimmick, is just the top 10 films based on their business, correct?
On box office, yeah. But the thing is, just because, and as we know, and knowing that Transformers 4 was basically one of the highest box office films of all time, just because a film has basically got a massive, massive box office does not mean that it's a good film. So that's why it's good to do the top, like, you know, the top 10, you know, box office, because you'll get basically good films in there and you'll get really bad films in there.
All right, let's pick our starting point. Let's explain to people we're doing this. We're doing off this, and we'll obviously we'll link it in the description. It's from Tico170.com.
Yeah,
their Statsmania chart. Yes.
Yeah, I just found a site that basically listed all the top 10.
Yes, and I'm sure most of these numbers are probably, if you do a Google search for the top movies in a given year, they'll probably give you the exact same ones. But you're just letting people know, and I'll link it in the description. This is where we're pulling our numbers from.
Okay. So do you want to read the top 10 now, if you've got the list there?
Yeah, I have it right in front of me. You ready?
Okay. Yep.
Okay, at number one, at $106.4 million. I'm not actually sure. I'm sure these are millions. Whatever. I'll leave off the number. So at number one, Love Story. Number two, Airport. Number three, MASH. Number four, Patton. Number five, Woodstock. Number six, Little Big Man. Number seven, let's see if I can pronounce this right. Is this a German title? Erin Grand I Die Seichfen. Okay. Number nine, let's see if I can pronounce this. The Aristocrats. And at number 10, our final movie, An Ach Eve de Eretzka. So those are our top 10 films of 1970.
Okay. So from that, we both got to pick one that we sort of, you know, if we were on a desert island and we had to pick one of those films on DVD to take with us to watch, which one would it be? And then one to basically dish. From that list, I think the one that I'm going to pick is the one I really, really like and would sort of like, you know, if I could only watch one of those films ever again, it would be MASH.
Ooh, okay.
I think I will pick MASH. Basically because, I mean, a lot of people know the TV series. I actually think the film has probably aged better than the TV series. I mean, I did really like, especially the early couple of seasons when we had the original cast on of MASH, I really did like it. But I'm going to go with the actual film itself. It's absolutely you know, hilarious film. Just, you know, really, really, really funny. It's actually a film that's quite unusual because although it's basically set in the Korean War, it's basically designed to be actually more about the Vietnam War, which was sort of going on at the time. But yeah, that's what I'm going to go for. There's some great performances in it as well. Donald Sutherland plays the Hawkeye character, and there's just so many, you know, real, really funny, moments to it. It's kind of like a sort of, the narrative itself, if I remember, I do remember, because I've seen this film so many times, it's got lots and lots of like episodic stories in it. There's not just one narrative. It's kind of more like a situation of sort of, lots of things that these guys, you know, get into. Like, you know, there's a storyline where, you know, we're trying to get rid of Frank Burns. And there's another storyline where basically one of the characters, he basically goes off with one of the nurses one night and can't perform. So he thinks he assumes he's gay. So then he decides he wants to kill himself. So they basically come up with a scenario where they make him think he's going to commit suicide when he's not. There's just always like, you know, different sort of, you know, antics that, you know, that go along them, but just, you know, really funny stuff. And a lot of the sort of like the elements of this obviously went into the TV show. So, I'm I'm gonna go with MASH as the one that I will basically pick out of that list.
Okay, I lucked out this week because I've actually seen one of the films on. I've seen a couple of the films on this list, but I think going forward, I may have to do homework prior to this because I think going forward I got lucky this week, but I get the feeling other weeks I may have never seen any of these films, and this is a great opportunity for me to watch some not necessarily classic ones, but well known that are in the popular lexicon of films, but. I'm gonna cheat and just go with Patton. Like it's hard to bet against that movie. It's an absolute classic. Everyone knows the scene of him doing the monologue in front of the flag. That's absolutely classic. That's why I was wondering. I'm like, is Dad gonna pick this movie? Him not being an American, I wonder. So that sort of answers my question. But do you think you sort of also explain you picked MASH? And that was just one of those things. I'm like, I wonder if he's gonna go with this. But that's gonna be my pick. That's a cinema classic. Okay, and then what are we going to do for our slates?
Okay. The slate, I'm going to go with the Woodstock one. and this is kind of a little bit prejudice on my part, is because I absolutely love live music. You know, I go to concerts, I go to musicals, I'll go to small gigs. I mean, if I'm on holiday and I go past a bar or something and I hear live music on, you know, I'm set for the afternoon then. You know, I just love live music. But the one thing that I've never really liked the idea of is the several day rock festival type thing. You know, it's just never interested me, the idea of basically going to a rock festival, basically being just like, you know, cramped, spending days without having a shower. If I don't have like a shower or a bath, once a day, I feel it. The idea of basically being there with loads and loads of people who are all like smelling and everything like that, it just doesn't get it. Plus the fact that all these like massive rock festivals, you know, unless you sort of like get there really, really early and are prepared to like, you know, state your claim, chances are you're going to be looking at about this stage about like a mile away with a really bad sound system that you can't sort of make out. So, you know, just the whole thing about, you know, and all the idea of all the sort of like, you know, portaloos or basically sort of overflowing everything and really bad food and stuff. Ooh. That whole thing just doesn't, you know, do anything for me. And I have actually seen, well, I've not seen the whole thing of this film Woodstock. I did start watching it and it kind of, Woodstock has always had this like mythical status in people's mind as we sort of, you know, because it was like the first one and because of Jimi Hendrix playing the national anthem and everything like that. But when you actually sort of see it in a documentary and watch the performances, it kind of blows it a bit because it doesn't sound, it's, you know, rock festivals, I guess it's more about being there sort of live and everything like that. But when you actually see it on a TV, it kind of, you know, the music's just not sort of, you know, it doesn't sound great. It's more about what the festival was actually about rather than the actual sort of music on the day, how that sounded. It just, a lot of the things like, you know, sound really ropey. And it just, I remember there's a scene as well where I remember that on the tunnel, they were announcing stuff like, there's acid in, you know, you can get acid in these areas. It might not be good acid and stuff. And it's that whole sort of like hippie type culture. It just kind of, you know, so, if that's a film I never personally need to see again.
All right. You know, like I said, some of these films I've never seen, and I'm sure the one I'm going to pick right now, I'm going just basing it exclusively on my memories of the film. Also sort of the things of, you know, sort of seeing now with adult eyes. And I'm sure this is going to make a lot of people mad. And really, a lot of this is just because I haven't seen a lot of these films on this list. So I'm just going to go the one I've seen and I not much care for is The Aristocrats. Aristocats, oh, yeah, okay. It's one of these films growing up, and it's like, it's that there's that pantheon of Disney films. And I've seen some of them, and some of them really haven't connected with me. And this was always the one that, you know, because older generations, because an older film, people have this, you know, this attachment to the film. But it's one of those things where I watch it and I'm like, this isn't, like, even when I was a child, I'm like, I don't much care for this. This, like, I understand it's older animation, but then again, I've seen stuff that's, you know, from even decades prior to this that Disney has made. And I'm just like, no, this is something like maybe from that, I haven't really, like, this is one of those films where you see all the well-known Disney songs and characters, and this is the one that no one really mentions. And then there's that thing watching with 2016 eyes with the with the Siamese cats. I'm like, that's one of those things you watch now and you sort of cringe. And it's just like, yeah, this is one thing that I can, as an adult, I could be like, I could maybe appreciate the animation that went into the technical prowess that went into it. But really the story itself, I just think it's, you know, just kind of just there.
I've got to admit, you mentioned that it's one of the ones that people don't really sort of like, you know, remember. I've never seen it.
See, there's a reason for that.
But the thing is, even when I was a kid growing up, it's not one that I ever particularly wanted to. You know, as a kid growing up, you know, because there was a time where you couldn't actually get any of the Disney films on video. Mm-hmm. You know, they just didn't release them. It's the only like a recent thing where you could actually see them. As a kid, you know, I wanted to see Bambi. I wanted to see The Rescuers. Obviously I wanted to see Jungle Book. You know, so I wanted to see, and if the, because we used to do a thing on, in the UK, they used to do a TV show that they would have, which was basically, it just used to show you like lots and lots of clips from Disney films. So it'd run for like an hour, and in that time it'd show you like, mainly it was the song features that they would show and stuff. And I always remember that when the Aristocrats came on, I wasn't that bothered about it. You know, I really loved all the other, like, you know, like sort of like, you know, like, you know, you know, The Rescuers and all the scenes from like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and all that sort of thing. But Aristocats, it's just, yeah, it's kind of like the forgotten one. I'm actually quite surprised it actually is in the top 10, to be honest.
Well, it's one of those things to where it was, you know, still sort of the big Disney traditional animation achievement, I'm sure, at the time. But really, you watch it, and even then, like as a kid, my first knee-jerk reaction would be like, oh, this is old. But then I saw something like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. That's from the 70s. I mean, that's from the 30s. So, I didn't have that complaint then. So I'm there and I'm like, what is wrong with this film? And I don't know. Have you heard of the Siamese cats?
I thought they were in Lady and the Tramp.
Maybe they were. Maybe I'm getting confused now.
We're missing the We Are.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. You're right. Now I'm getting that confused. But still, that's one of these films, like, aside from maybe the title track that everyone's familiar with, I don't really remember anything from it, and I remember just watching it as a child, and just like, I don't want to watch this.
No, I mean, you mentioned the animation, but the bits I have actually seen of it, the animation sort of just looks, it always reminds me more of like the Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
Animation. Because when you watch something like Jungle Book, or like you mentioned Snow White and that's got this like real classy grace to it. You know, it's sort of like, you know, it looks beautiful. It's just, you know, it's sort of thing in its own style. Whereas, you know, Aristocats, it just kind of just looks like, you know, the sort of cartoons you were getting on TV at the time.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure there's going to be weeks to where, and I still don't know how I'm going to figure this out. Some of these films, maybe I've never seen. So maybe I'll just pick one, or maybe I'll just disdain. I'll be like, you know what? I don't know these films well enough to where I'm not going to, you know, where I'm going to slate one. So, we'll see. But going forward, I think that's the one I'm just going to pick for this week.
Okay. Well, I'll be able to, even if you've not seen them, I'll be able to recommend them to you.
Okay.
Or not recommend them to you as it goes on. It can be like your, winding in your film, repertoire, film viewing repertoire.
Well, some of these, you know, and going forward, I can see some of these are, you know, classic films I've never seen before. So it'll be a great opportunity to go out of my way to watch it. So, yep. It's just an excuse. And then there's obviously some films I've seen that are supposedly classics that I've since seen them I don't much care for, and I'm looking at next week, and there's one that's sticking out, you know, like a red, trying to think of the expression, like a sore thumb, and it's just like, I'm going to love slating that one.
Yeah. Oh, I've got a few that I already did.
I'm going to take great pleasure in next week slating one, that's supposedly a classic, but,
you know what? I'm guessing it's because you've not seen it. I thought you were going to slate Love Story.
No, I've seen it. I've seen this one. So I know exactly where it's coming from. And it's a supposed classic. So I'm like, I have no reservations going off. And I don't care if I make people upset in the process. This film's terrible. I hate it. So that's something to look forward to next week.
Just a quick thing, because there's something I wanted to add to this segment is, just out of interest, to look at what they actually won the Oscar for that year.
Ooh, that's even a better thing doing going forward, because it'd be a great sort of thing to, you know, sort of contextualize this to where, you know, people often say, you know, they'll say so-and-so won the Oscar, or what film won the Oscar, And then you'll look down and you'll see some of the best films of all time. They haven't won an Oscar.
Yeah.
Or legendary performance.
Or sometimes stuff will actually win an Oscar. And then you'll not have any idea what the actual film is or anything. I'm just trying to, I'll admit, I'm actually just trying to, I'm just stalling here and then tapping.
Yeah, that's fine.
Right, okay. 1970, was Midnight Cowboy.
Huh.
I think that's going to be the interesting thing going forward is with a lot of these top tens, most of the time you'll find that the film that won the best the Oscar for the best film, was nowhere near the top 10.
Yeah.
Midnight Cowboy is a great film. I don't know if you've ever seen that one, but that's a
I know, but I've heard good things about it. So.
Yeah, it's a real good film. Very, 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 very bleak and depressing, which is probably why it won the Oscar. But great performances. I mean, Dustin Hoffman was absolutely fabulous in it. But a real good film. Great music as well. The theme is absolutely haunting. And even if you've not seen the film, if you actually were to watch it, you'd recognize the theme music because it's been played in so many other things.
Okay, sounds good. Is there anything else that we're going to add to this? I mean, we're sort of figuring this out, this new format as we go. So is that going to do it? Are we going to talk anything else before we wrap this up?
No, I think that's pretty much the idea that I had. But this is kind of like our test run for it. So
okay, so it fits well on halfguard.com because even though we're still exclusively an MMA website, but we also talk all things pop culture. Like we've talked comic books in the past on this show. So it's really one of those things to where going forward, we're dealing with a blank sheet, so we can do anything we want. So. And before we wrap this show up, we have to tease what we're going to be doing in the future as well. Now, we've done interviews in the past before. Both me and Daz have talked to the folk from 2000 AD. We talked to the producer, the director. Going forward, we actually had someone reach out to us. I mean, I've been utilizing Twitter with our Comic Conversations account. If you haven't already, you can follow us at twitter.com/iComicPodcast. But we did our show a while back about the New Mutants. And I saw, I think, what was it last week, that 80s X-Men was trending. So I decided, I'll take advantage of this, and we'll talk new. I'll plug our New Mutants show because that's predominantly when the New Mutants, the one that we specifically discussed, was going on during the 80s. So it seemed like a natural fit, and with everything with that music video that from Greasy Pig Studios, the one that depicted the New Mutants going to a concert of Lily Chaney and Dazzler. So we use that as our intro and outro, but sure enough, the people that did that music video as well were also cruising Twitter, and they saw that we used their song for their intro and outro. And I know you, Daz, initially when I told you that, you're like, "Uh-oh, are we in trouble?"
Yeah.
And then I informed you that they reached out to us, and they're like, they liked that we used it and all. I was like, you know what, we do a show, and they've done print interviews before, so I was like, hey, do you guys want to talk to us? And they'll be like, yeah, we'd be more than happy to. So that's something I think we're probably going to be doing next week or the week after. So keep an eye out for that. That should be a good show. If you haven't already checked that show out, I'll be sure to link in the description. But, I'm really excited. Let's see if I can pull up the director's name in front of me. I believe it's, Arvin Bautista. He's the director of said, music video. So he's reached out to us, and we look forward to talking about him. And like you said, you've done your research on him. And obviously, you don't decide to do a New Mutants music video out of the blue. Obviously, you have to have some context. You have to have some love for the series. So that's something that I'm looking forward to. We will talk to him about, the nuts and bolts of making the music video, but then also the inspiration for it. It's like his love of, that 80s, 90s era of X-Men. So it's one of those things to where we've done a bunch of comic shows in the past, so we'll be right at home.
Yeah. And that music video as well, it was sort of, it's one of these things where you're getting a lot of like really passionate fans who sort of are working hard and doing like, really good, videos and stuff like that. There's loads of them on YouTube. And what amazes me about them is the actual, these have like, really good special effects and stuff. It's got to a stage where people are sort of like, have the access to actually do special effects, and all they need is the imagination to do something with them. And one thing that impressed me was the fact that, because they've got all sort of like these young kids dressed as New Mutants and everything, and they also look like them, but they've got a guy who is basically as Warlock.
Yeah, that was cool. They were sort of, I guess when they were doing that, they were wondering how they were going to do a Warlock, considering he's this gigantic character with all these, you know, if you would have done it, it would require all these, you know, non-traditional special effects. But what they decided to do, they decided that, they're going to make him up like a kid, but then, I guess, this is something we'll probably talk in the interview later, but then they found a way to make Warlock a person, so that way they can get around the special effects of having Warlock.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, it was, you know, it's just one thing. And like I said, when I've been reading up on him, it's sort of, you know, the era where I did the article and the show around, he really sort of, like, you know, loves that, you know, he loves Dazzle and everything, you know, so it'll be a, you know, a really good piece, I think, to, you know, to talk about him and all his stuff and, you know, that, you know, what drove him to basically make, you know, that New Mutants thing. And he's getting a lot of, you know, a lot of the other, podcasts and, you know, shows have basically been sort of like, you know, noticing this video we did and sort of, you know, liking it. So, yeah, it should be a good one.
And this is something that the music video is very good. I'm not trying to take away from it. It's a well done music video. There's a lot of work went into this. And, you know, that's sort of the appeal of why we're doing the interview. It's a really done, well done music video. But here's the thing. It's not just him as a director making this great music video. There's also a fantastic song on top of it.
Yeah. It hits that perfect, you know, because it's basically Lila Cheney and Dazzle were set very much in the '80s, and it hits that sort of style, you know, really, really well.
So it's one of these things to where, you're thinking us plugging it that it's just a great music video and the music is sort of secondary. No, they're on par. This is something that we're dealing with a fantastic music video for a fantastic original song. And if you haven't already, I'll be sure to link that in the description as well. It's going to be a massive description. But download the song. Obviously pay for it, but go out of your way to pay for the song because it's amazing. It's only $9.99, and then there's obviously all the providers for it. But I went out of my way to download this, and I'm glad I did. It's a great song. This is something that I actively have in my regular rotation of music.
And these are like proper, you know, the two girls that sort of, you know, there's one for a Dazzler song and a Lila Chan song. You know, they're actual, like, singers. You know, these are sort of, you know, ladies who are basically trying to make a career in the music, you know, video. You know, they're dedicated, like, you know, singers in their own mind that just happen to have basically got onto this sort of, this like New Mutants cosplay types, you know, song. But, you know, they are, you know, proper actual talented singers.
Okay, so that's something to look forward to. We're sort of just sort of teasing it now. So I think that more than any place ever is a great place to wrap this week's show up. In fact, now that I think about it, let's wrap up this week's show and let's play a little bit of that song in the background as we fade out to this show. So from all of us at HeavGuard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.